continuation of my comments dated about May the 5th, 1948, on the life in France after the war. Amidst all of this unsophisticated decency thrives tolerance, or better yet, a lack of intolerance. Blacks, then called Negroes, are much at home. Mixed dancing is a common sight that no one doubts or questions or frowns upon. Anti-Semitism is at its lowest ebb here in France in many decades, period. I have spoken to many Jews who have lived here for years without taking note of any intolerance. There are few employment discriminations, and evidence of restricted living areas is unheard of. The schools are open to all at the expense of the government. At the present time, about 0.5% of the total population is Jewish, with Jewish students making up 4% of the university population. This in itself demonstrates a certain freedom of bigotry that the rest of the world knows about. It is true, however, that there are individuals who have voiced anti-Jewish feelings, but it appears that they are in a definite minority and tend to be inconsequential. Some people here have told me about such cases when asked about anti-Semitism, but have stood aghast at the mention of quotas, restricted areas, and the like that exists routinely in the United States. About 2 weeks ago, a French magazine did a story entitled "France, Country of Refuge for the Displaced Jews." Actually, this has been the only country in the world that has received displaced persons without restriction or condition. And I'm told the only country permitting unhampered the purchase of arms and ammunition for the Haganah. This seems encouraging, but I wonder if it can continue in a world where hate is so prevalent. Communism, it seems, is not far from establishing a good foothold, with de Gaulle representing capitalistic autocracy balancing the scale. A road somewhere in between tends to be a rather narrow path here in France. It may be difficult to follow. The pressures from both extremes are tremendous. It has been said, and I believe, perhaps correctly, that every man has two countries, his own and France. Next is May 7th. For future reference, a student union has been established for French Jewish students with a membership of 1,500. Their main purpose is to aid needy students. The Joint Distribution Committee, therefore, has underwritten them with a minimal amount. A needy student can get 6,000 francs from Joint, and there are about 200 students who have applied. A few get less, depending on their amount of self-support. These bourses are provided upon recommendation of a student and faculty committee. It is interesting that medicine is given top priority, liberal arts last. Among these students are the Jewish boys from Beirut, having have been turned out of there in an anti-Jewish incident not long ago. It is amazing to see the amount of determination some students possess. They may have absolutely no income, no family, and yet are determined to finish school. They do it with our 6,000 francs, equal to $20 per month, plus tutoring, odd jobs, and so forth. Another important problem here in Paris is the 500 boys and girls over 18 who are completely dependent on joint. Their rooms and meals are provided, and retraining and apprenticeship are made possible. But these are people who need parental guidance more now than ever. They're under no restriction and rely completely upon their own judgments, which for that age group cannot be expected to be reliable. They can't be confined to homes, and they represent the age group having most orphans and being least wanted for adoption. There seems to be no satisfactory solution at the present time. Meanwhile, many of these youngsters are growing up completely demoralized amidst poverty and indifference. May 11th, the train arrived in Milano in time for dinner. It was an excellent dinner, with all steaks with all the trimmings. The restaurant was nice. There were many well-dressed Italians around me. So it seems that even here there are some well-to-do people, and believe it or not, nobody has tried to hold me up as yet. I was accompanied by Murray Gitlin. Tonight I met Dr. Harold Glasser, an economist, and we were with the Milan director and his assistant for JDC, and discussed among us the problems in Italy with displaced persons. I learned tonight of more British interference with our efforts for solution. This seems to be a great problem, the answer to which no one seems sure of. Along this line, I am now reminded of an incident that occurred in Geneva. Very interesting. At a student hangout, some Palestinian students got up and did a Palestinian dance with Hebrew lyrics to boot. They were not ashamed or apologetic for their religion. They had dignity. Everybody clapped, and inside of me was the thought, would any of our American Jews do something equivalent in American? Let me say at this point, and this is not written in the diary, but I assume that these were Palestinian Jews. And it's interesting that now we think only of Palestinians in terms of Muslims. But to continue, no, we wouldn't. We rationalize by pushing religion into the background. We claim Americanism as our religion, and we condone assimilation because it's easier, or at least so it seems. But nothing good is easy, nor is it honest, nor is it dignified to deny our birthright. But we do. We promote intolerance by being so intolerant of ourselves. And those who would deny this in loudest terms, let them be hungry and see who will feed them, or cold and see who will take them in. Then they will no longer deny the potency of a birthright, much less the existence of one. If it will ever be possible to learn from experiences of others, then please let it start with us. May 12th. Today something new happened to me. I learned complete humility. This had not occurred in France, at least not as decidedly. The day's tour included two camps and one prospective work project. This was my first experience in a real displaced persons camp, and it wasn't pleasant. To walk through large rooms lined with army cots on both sides with hardly any space between each bed, to see whole families existing and waiting, hoping for something better, to see the young boys playing ball in the courtyards, babies that are healthy and cute and lovable, to see the younger men in workshops learning electricity, carpentry, and tool making, to see new arrivals, some checking in, others asleep so soundly that nothing could seemingly disturb their temporary peace, and yet to see many of these people smile and greet you with shalom. Yes, this is humbling. This makes one feel humility. It seems impossible to be inconspicuous, but yet you try. You are afraid to stare because you know that these people are not curios. But people only temporarily dislocated from what we know as living. It is difficult to talk to them because you have nothing good to tell them. And of the bad, they hear enough. But somehow, for the sake of research, let us say you question a few about their ideas for a future. Their answers, at least in northern Italy, are pretty much one like the other. Their answers are borne out by the large numbers training for the Haganah. These are the people who filter into Italy, mostly from Eastern Europe, because they want to get to Palestine. One man of seemingly good faculties put it this way: oh, to be a free citizen in a free country. Some young boys learning a trade felt equally as strong on the subject. Many of them have relatives elsewhere, but they fear anti-Semitism beyond our conception, and they reason that there will be no anti-Semitism in a country of their own. There are still others, older, less enthusiastic, who feel no heroic or patriotic urges, but want only a place to live and die in peace. For the most part, the people here in northern Italy seem to be more alive, more ambitious, and more determined. Obviously, it results from the psychological satisfaction of living today so that tomorrow's goal might be obtained. They are like college students on their way to see the home team win the championship. Life has, in fact, once more become purposeful. This has recently been adequately borne out. IRO, that stands for the International Refugee Organization of the United Nations, has been attempting to clear out northern Italy in favor of moving the camps to the south. Their theory is that only this will put a stop to the constant influx of illegals across the Italian border. It is clear to all concerned that these people are bound for illegal entry into Palestine. IRO is controlled by ex-army and navy regulars, and mostly British. So the reason for stopping the influx and therefore subjecting these displaced persons to another move, to another camp, becomes obvious. The attempt was made this week. A hunger strike in the camp followed. Twice this happened, and today IRO decided that since the Jews won't move to southern Italy, they will refuse to register any more of the illegal entries. Of course, this is just another of the many stumbling blocks in the path to the solution. These determined Jews do not stop with mere words or gestures in proving their desire. I saw two healthy, red-faced Poles on a little farm near here, preparing for 50 others to join them in a 5-year cooperative so that they might put their skills to work for the good of their brethren as well as their own morale. Amidst all this unfortunate misery, one more thing is encouraging. It is the medical setup in these camps. At the receiving center for the new arrivals, everyone receives a physical examination, a Wasserman test, chest X-ray, and a urinalysis. The doctors seem thoroughly interested, well-organized, and quite capable. Their facts are also encouraging. The children suffer no malnutrition, avitaminosis. Tuberculosis is no more prominent than for all of Europe. And venereal disease is well under control. There is a dispensary which is clean and well staffed with an entirely separate clinic for ambulatory cases. From a camp of over 1,000 people, there were only 4 patients in the dispensary beds. While on the subject of working for self-improvement, I am reminded of a conversation with an Italian Jewess who is employed by Joint. She has been with Joint since 1946, having worked day and night in those early days and without significant remuneration. Before that, there is the usual story of a nice family, retired father, no anti-Semitism, marked assimilation, and then, boom, hiding, fear, finally camps, more fear. Now it is difficult for her family to make ends meet, having lost everything. But what concerns her most is that we are not doing enough for the more unfortunate Jews, that we are becoming too complacent and are forsaking them after 3 years of promises. But no future has been provided. She says this in spite of her admission that prior to the persecution of Jews in Italy, she hardly knew that she was a Jew. But now she knows and feels that the indecision about the feasibility of assimilation is no longer justified. We have only to get together and work for one another, and thus for the good of all. So today I felt like a fool many times over, because regardless of how hard I try, I can never measure up to the dignity of a man who has suffered but still tries to overcome his setback. May 13th. Having just arrived in Rome from Milan, it is necessary that I record here the paradox of IRO. The IRO, that is International Refugee Organization, maintaining and supervising 5 camps in North Italy, have been attempting to move these installations to southern Italy. Camp Adriatica was moved before the Italian elections on the pretext that this was needed by the Italian government for security patrols. The pretext is still the same, with elections over and no semblance of social unrest in Italy. Realizing full well that the real reasons are aimed at stopping the filtration of people to the Haganah, the people of the second camp have refused to move. They refuse to be shipped about at the will of selfish government interest as though they were only parcels of mail. The IRO ordered rations stopped on Monday, May 10th. But with the ingenuity for overcoming obstacles such as this, they were still eating partial rations on Wednesday. Well, as in all crises, a conference was held in Milan, attended by the director of IRO for Italy, Mr. Simpson, formerly of the American Army, Professor Royce, an American on the payroll of the State Department, a representative of the Italian Foreign Ministry, the Chief of Italian Police, a couple of young boys, actually from the Haganah, and of course representatives of Joint, period. The Joint, however, is supposed to be the neutral party of necessity. Actually, it was quite expensive for Joint when a camp is moved, but politically it must be impartial. Of course, everybody came with orders from higher-ups. There was no sense to the meeting at all. The representative of the camp refused to move without receiving 24-hour rations. Simpson was uncompromising, sticking to the ultimatum that the Italian troops would be brought in by 6 o'clock that evening. The answer was, good, then they can sleep with us in camp tonight also. Professor Roy seemed almost willing to arrange some compromise, but the Italian government and IRO chief did not flinch. It was then agreed that another meeting would be held at 5 p.m. to make final plans one way or the other. My train left for Rome before I heard the results. But there are many instances of IRO indifference to the social welfare aspect of their job. This explanation will be obvious by example. Yesterday at the Italian hospital in Milan, at which place the JDC is given use of 20 to 30 beds, there were several patients, registered clients of IRO, but cared for by JDC. One patient, age 50, male, had diabetes, another leukemia, a fatal disease, another pituitary adenoma or acromegaly. All three were refused medical care by IRO on the grounds that they were not actually ill. They say there is no budget for chronic cases. The truth, however, is ironic. In all their attempts at economy, they were so successful that they found, after the first accounting, that the expenditures are far below the allocated $150 million. Should we be surprised, however, when we find that the director of IRO is an American by the name of Tuck, and a formerly nice guy, but completely passive. The active staff is one-half British and mostly military. They are not social workers, nor are Britishers sympathetic to the displaced person's cause. More realism indicating the difficulties in solving these problems was manifested to me in Geneva by Major Farrell, Director of Army Displaced Persons Operations in Austria. Also a nice chap, but came up with an idea like this, quote, that we should forget about DPs, let them go, and they'll get along fine, unquote. Also a good, intelligent, social-minded fellow, I would say. These are but a few of the ironies with which we must contend before arriving at the ultimate solution to these problems. There are some brighter aspects, however. The medical program in Milan, under the direction of Dr. Mickelberg, is superb. First, let me tell you about this doctor. He's short, thin, young. His nature is pleasant and unassuming, with no pretense of achievement. He is sweet, honest, and conscientious. Actually, he is bashful and feels himself inferior to the task before him. But everyone with whom I spoke told me quite the opposite. In fact, they didn't have to tell me. It was obvious from what there was to see. At Ciari, that's spelled C-I-A-R-I, the admission camp for new arrivals, the procedure is excellent. Many features of the camp were not as satisfactory as some might hope for, but the hospital, clinic, and laboratory, each under the direction of a physician, himself a DP, were far superior to what might be expected. They were clean, reasonably attractive, and well-staffed. The methods used, both medically and systematically, seem more than adequate to cope with their specific problems. Each entry receives a complete physical exam, blood tests for syphilis, urinalysis, chest x-ray. The venereal cases are treated by modern methods, and they are separated from the others to prevent spread. The TB cases are sent to a specialist for positive diagnosis, and if necessary, they are placed in a sanatorium. In the center of Milan, an ambulatory is maintained for all DPs, including the many who are not in camps but participate in producer cooperatives. This group makes up about 40% of the entire DP population of northern Italy. This dispensary, handling about 2,500 patients per month, seemed well-staffed and well-equipped, including an excellent fluoroscope. The staff consists of 40 physicians, most of whom are specialists, who hold their own clinics at specific hours during the week. The physician in charge stressed their desire to develop healthy children, so great emphasis is placed on good obstetrics and pediatrics. This idea is obviously generally accepted by all of European Jewry. For healthier looking children are nowhere to be seen than in the midst of the most unsatisfactory DP installations. After the dispensary, we visited the hospital used by Joint. It was a very large hospital, having been partially destroyed by some of our less accurate bombardiers. The wards were, however, very attractive, and after examining several charts and reviewing some cases with the physicians in charge, it became obvious to me that modern medicine is not purely an American innovation. Even more interesting, however, is the fact that in spite of a great shortage of beds in Milan, JDC doctors are given a place in both the hospitals and the sanatoriums.
Period.
To complete the medical picture in Milan, a convalescent home is an operation for care of the chronically ill, aged, and partially invalided patients to whom this care could not be given under displaced person camp conditions. This particular home houses 65 people at an expense of 750 lira per person per day. This is about one-tenth the cost of maintaining a ward patient in the average American hospital. In addition, hospital bed days are saved for those requiring medical workups, and even more important, people who would otherwise be left to the mercy of displaced person living are given a chance for recovery. The medical cases themselves are not different from the average practice in the States. Colds, running ears, some pleurisy, cancer, gastroenteritis, blood dyscrasias, and so on, all are seen in their expected proportions. Tuberculosis is not a great problem. Skin tests reveal more positives in younger children, but fewer active cases of secondary infection. This is, as we might expect, period. The early post-war years were different in that many advanced cases were discovered, but these have been weeded out, and obviously only the strongly immune have withstood the increased exposure of crowded and poor living conditions for so many years. Until the present time, syphilis seemed no problem, being of exceedingly low incident among the DPs. But now the statistics in Milan are different. The records recently show a 20% incident among the new entries. The explanation for this great increase seems to be attributed to the area from which most people are now coming, since the general occurrence in that area, namely Romania, has always been disproportionately high. At the present time, these doctors see no avitaminosis, malnutrition, or bone decalcification. The presence of preeclampsia and pregnancy has steadily been reduced in number since the time of liberation. Generally, the health picture is excellent. For this, we must be greatly indebted to the many DP doctors who themselves, having suffered indescribable indecencies and torture, are devoting their total energies and abilities to the restoration of a courageous people. It is true that JDC money has made their work possible, but after seeing their devotion to duty, their love for work, and their desire to fight back against great odds and so many defeats, the giving of money alone seems to shrink almost into obscurity. To these men of medicine, let us take off our hats. A side note on this visit is as follows. One, a study of 6,500 cases as follows. 10% complained of heart disease, but 3% were diagnosed as heart disease. Two, from 1,500 recent cases, only 5 actually demonstrated diabetes. Three, amenorrhea and dysmenorrhea were very common. Four, ulcers make up the predominant medical picture. And 5, only less than 1%, that's 0.75%, showed an X-ray evidence of tuberculosis. Paragraph, May 14th. Since my arrival in Italy, I have noticed a sense of warmth and hospitality among these people that makes one glad to be here. Lewis Horowitz, director of JDC for Italy, told me a story that significantly demonstrates this atmosphere. His 9-year-old son ordinarily likes to ride the baggage cars in train stations. On a recent trip to Switzerland, the child didn't follow this usual practice. Not that he was instructed against it in Switzerland, but it seemed he lacked the feeling of receptiveness on the part of the Swiss porters. However, on changing trains at the Italian border, once again, he hopped aboard the baggage wagon, and the Italian porters love it. Even this child senses the change in attitude as one crosses into Italy. I have heard dozens of stories about how the people here welcome the Jew as one of their own, how they helped them during the fascist regime, and how they still defy government regulations in assisting the displaced Jews who attempt to do business here or desire to settle here. At one installation of DPs in a small town in northern Italy, the community relations became so strong that shortly after removal of these Jews, a committee from the village requested that they be returned, because the townspeople found the friendships and business relations extremely pleasing and beneficial. Tonight, I asked a chap how to get to the Re degli Amici restaurant. That's spelled capital R-E, small D-E-G-L-I, capital A-M-I-C-I. Because I couldn't understand his Italian, he took me there, and it was at least a 5-block walk. In general, the attitude is one of good cheer. Nobody seems to rush, and nobody worries. Politically, the Italians know less and care much less than do the American newspapers. I have not yet met one Italian who suspected for an instant that the communists would take over Italy. And from what they say here, the U.S. State Department put on the best political campaign of all the parties involved. This is a side comment. This refers to the Italian election shortly after the war, in which the United States State Department put on a real big show, and I actually remember that, in order to prevent communists from coming into power. Paragraph, the head of the largest bank of Italy had lunch with a close friend of mine, Dr. Harold Glasser. Mr. Mattioli told him that the American government is fascist and that every country of Europe has united on one intellectual and financial issue, and that is to exploit the U.S. as much as is possible. He claimed that Italy's problem cannot be solved by ERP, which, if I recall correctly, refers to the European Recovery Program, because there is no great shortage here. The only problem is too many Italians, of whom they would like to export 200,000 a year. Well, this next section was written on May 15th, 1948, at 1:30 in the morning, and it's entitled Rome, Celebration and Preparation. Today has been an extremely significant one, being the Independence Day for the Hebrew nation. I am very happy that I spent this day in Rome, because this is the center of the great movement to Palestine. Everybody here is a Zionist. In fact, there are no anti-Zionists anywhere in Europe. At least, if there are, they must be hiding, because I ask everyone I see, and so far have gotten no negative answers. So tonight I was invited to attend the dedication ceremony and celebration. It was no small honor to be accepted by this amazing group of people. All of the top leaders of every Jewish organization in this area were present, totaling about 60 or 70. Many speeches were made, one in Hebrew by the representative of the Jewish agency, another in Jewish by a long-winded chap who I didn't know, a third in English by the director of joint, the fourth by the chairman of the Jewish Refugee Committee, and a fifth by the president of the Roman Jewish community who spoke in Italian. Among those present were several members of the Haganah, newspaper reporters, a girl from Time magazine, and several others whose names and titles have slipped my memory. This group was interesting because among those present were Poles, Lithuanians, Germans, Austrians, Romanians, Italians, Palestinians, Americans, and so on. Some were rich, some were poor, some religious, some were not. Some were formerly in concentration camps, while others were partisans of various resistance movements. But they were all Jews, all Zionists, and though their native tongues differed, all of them understood one language, Yiddish. Together they toasted the Jewish state, and together they are determined to fight. Unfortunately, wars cannot be won with spirit alone. And now that Arab invasion is imminent and war has been declared, it will not be long before we will know if the Jewish army can continue their successes without adequate heavy arms. A great deal depends on the U.S. State Department. If they give recognition, then the outcome is practically inevitable. It is felt here that Poland will lead in the acceptance of the Jewish nation. If, however, wars could be won by spirit and determination, there is no doubt that these Jews could conquer the world if that were their goal. In the last few days, I've had the opportunity of visiting about six Hachsharots, that's spelled Hachsharots, in this area. These are miniature kibbutzim, preparing for the time when they will join their brethren in Palestine. The morale is superb, in contrast to the non-Zionist installations which are to be found in France. These people glow with vitality. They work hard. They study hard. Many of the people in these groups come from various backgrounds, such as education, science, literature, and music. But these they are forsaking so that they can fit the requirements of a sound Jewish economy. Some are learning to be fishermen. Others are becoming proficient in skilled skilled trades, agriculture, and other occupations that will be of value in Palestine. Not one of the many with whom I have spoken have once indicated that they would prefer to return to their original fields of endeavor. Besides this preparation, they function as complete units, each within itself. Basic rations and housing come from IRO, International Refugee Organization, and joint, But the cooking, care of their living quarters, improvements, gardening for fresh greens, and supervision all come from among themselves. After seeing much the opposite in groups not bound for Palestine, it becomes apparent that the mental attitude resulting from the presence of an obtainable goal is more valuable than all the charity in the universe. Now they have something to shoot at, and if anyone can find a deteriorated or demoralized DP among these groups, let him be shown, and I will become anti-Zionist. The reasons given for their state of mind are usually similar, but differ only in the wonderful choice of words. I remember one fellow saying that he will not chance subjecting his children to the awful fate that his family knew, and only in a land of his own will he feel security. Incidentally, he was a rabid anti-Zionist before the persecution. Others say that they want to live where they will never have to be apologetic for their religion, where they can announce aloud, "I am a Jew," and be happy about it. From the thousands of people that I have seen and those I have talked with, there is only one conclusion for me to draw in view of my being a doctor. It is simply this, that the dream of Palestine has served as a medicine, the equal of which has never been seen. No psychoanalysis could begin to have accomplished the reestablishment of the mental facility of good mental facilities, courageous spirit, and self-determination that we are now seeing in each of these Palestinian-bound people. Now at last, after considerable skepticism, I am beginning to see a ray of light that can possibly result in the dawn for the displaced persons of Europe. And so, to this end, we must give our every effort. This is the end of tape one, side two. Further, it is clear that the patient is hypochondriacal and suffers from psychosomatic illness for which it would be difficult to establish a specific etiology, period.